Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 96 of Fit Friends Happy Hour. In this episode, Katie and I interview Sissy Brady Rogers, a psychotherapist, speaker, and writer with 25 years of experience specializing in eating disorders, body image, and women's spirituality. We had a blast talking to Sissy about body image and how we can improve that body image despite what our culture teaches us. This is an interview you definitely do not want to miss. We're also announcing some big changes to Fit Friends Happy Hour and an exciting giveaway that starts today. All right, let's get to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour with your hosts, Katie Hake and Lauren Wrighton.
Before we launch into today's episode, we want to announce some exciting changes that are happening here at Fit Friends Happy Hour. So you may have noticed some slight changes in our cover art and our branding overall.
Yes, we've been working really hard over the past couple of months to bring you guys kind of a fresh look. But most importantly, we, as of today, the day that this episode is released, November 12th, we're opening up our Facebook group for all of our Fit Friends Happy Hour listeners. You can now join our Facebook tribe. And this is where we hope that we can all come together and talk about these topics that we talk about on a weekly basis.
Our hope for the Facebook group is really to create this constant energy for you to really hear this messaging day in and day out, to create that energy that's positive, motivating, uplifting. And so you don't just listen to the podcast and then tune out. We want you to hear these messages and connect with other strong, like-minded women who are just like you and want to be growing and changing for the best each and every day.
So in addition to the Facebook group that we are now launching, we are going to be doing a giveaway because we're excited. And what better way to show that excitement by doing a giveaway? So with this giveaway, you have a chance to win a Sparkle Hustle Grow subscription box. Now, if you are unfamiliar, go look this up right away. It is a specific subscription box for entrepreneurial women. And even if you don't consider yourself an entrepreneur, you'll love this box because it's all about everything that we are all about. So you know you're going to love it. Books, like beautiful paper goods, like it's amazing. So our winner is going to get a Sparkle Hustle Grow box specifically from Katie and I. And the way that you can enter the giveaway is by writing a review on Apple Podcasts / iTunes and by joining the Facebook group. So you'll get one entry for writing a review and another entry for joining the Facebook group. And we'll be keeping track of this. So if you have like a funky name as your Apple ID, I guess you should probably let us know or consider changing it if it's like shoddy 1989.
To enter the giveaway, that starts today. We're going to announce the winner on December 10th. So you've got a little time, but you might as well just pull out your phone and write that review now. Join the Facebook group now. We'll leave the link in the show notes because if you're like us, you're going to see something shiny and forget. Also, the Sparkle Hustle Grow Box is pretty badass, if I do say so myself. Lauren got me this as a birthday gift like a couple months later, which made it even more awesome. And the pink gel pen, let me tell you, it is not just a regular pink gel pen. It is the best pen I've ever used in my life. And I'm going to cry when it runs out. But there were more things than just the pen, let me tell you. You will die.
I really hope there's this pink gel pen in every single box because people are like, I want to use this pen now. So we're super excited about the Facebook group. We're so excited about this giveaway, and we're so excited to continue to build this community, and we've just been so honored by everyone that's joined along the way. But on to this episode. So the topic of this episode could not have been more perfectly planned. We are interviewing Sissy Brady Rogers. She's the founder and executive director of Alive and Well Women, a Los Angeles-based nonprofit revolutionizing the way women relate to ourselves and each other about health, beauty, and sexuality. And she is just a wealth of knowledge. So get excited about this interview. It is so, 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 so good. And you're going to get so many great nuggets from Sissy. Sissy, it is so great to have you on the podcast.
Yes, great. It's great to be here.
We are talking about all of our favorite topics today, body acceptance, women, all of that great stuff. So just to start off with, let us know a little bit about yourself and how you got into teaching body image.
Yeah. Currently, my main work right now is I'm the founder and executive director of a nonprofit organization called Alive and Well Women. And we are all about embodiment, empowerment for women, and doing that from a place of love. And really, we see ourselves as a movement of women who, as we are being transformed by really truly learning to love ourselves as we are and connecting to our own inherent goodness and our inner authority about knowing how to be well, that we then are moving out into the world to empower other women to love themselves as they are and discover their own superpowers and be agents of change in a culture that is in great need of women's power and voices and energy. But so many women are stuck in these places of spending so much time, energy, money, trying to change our bodies and get the right clothes and look the right part. And really, we're wasting so much of our goodness on trying to change things and fix things that really probably don't need to be fixed in many cases. And at least they don't need to be fixed the way we're often trying to fix them. So that's Alive and Well Women. We have programs. We have a program called the Contemplative Path to Health and Well-Being that is all about learning to connect to love in our own bodies. So that's really, the Alive and Well Women is my passion project at this point in my life, in my 50s. And I came to that by many years of work since I was about 30 or late 20s, working as a psychotherapist with predominantly women, young adult women early in my career. And some of those women had eating disorders. And I didn't really know a lot about eating disorders when I started working with them. But I realized in hearing their stories that I was not that different in many ways from my patients. The degree of severity of their behaviors and their thoughts and feelings about themselves were more extreme. But every woman I knew had some version of the same story that was negatively skewed view of our bodies and the need to be thinner or different in some way, shape, or form. And that was really my entrance into the work with eating disorders and then walking a parallel path as I worked with my clinically disordered patients, really working on my own healing and disembodiment. And that all really got activated when I had breast cancer at age 30 and had to have a mastectomy.
Oh, wow. And
that really pushed into the surface all of my own body image issues. And so it's really been a, you know, 26-year journey with myself and walking the path and really seeing it as a cultural problem more than a personal problem. It's we've all drank the Kool-Aid and we're living out these stories about our bodies being wrong or bad or inadequate. And that just sets us up for all kinds of problems. So that's a little bit about my background. I'm a marriage and family therapist licensed here in California and, you know, mostly have worked in private practice, have done a lot of workshops, retreats, trainings, both professional training and, you know, just popular retreat kind of work mm-hmm. over the years. And it's all kind of coming together in Alive and Well Women as we gather women from our own community to, as a prototype. So we're starting this, launching this effort in Pasadena, California, in the greater Pasadena area. Mm-hmm. And we envision, as we get the model grown and established, launching it elsewhere. That's the dream.
Yeah. Was it through seeing all the work that you did with clients and kind of in that setting that you started off? I mean, what was it that really sparked you to create Alive and Well Women? Like, was it just a vision? What kind of was that moment that pushed you to, okay, let's make this a reality?
Well, I'd been doing a lot of work on my own in individual work and then doing retreats and workshops. And the void I saw was the lack of a community, like not a therapy group, not something that was professional or something you were being paid for, but just women walking with other women who had a better perspective, a more loving, kind, generous a compassionate way of being with ourselves around our embodiment, and really saw that it wasn't about starting doing more therapy groups, because that's limited. You know, it was about really helping women in real time build relationships with other women and learn how to together, learning together that so much of the shame, as you guys, I'm sure you ladies know from Brené Brown's work on shame, that it's, you know, shame's powers and its secrecy. And the very things we don't want to talk about are the things we need to talk about to heal the shame. And that really happens most powerfully in communities and groups of women where we're just being honest and we go, oh my gosh, I feel that way too. And there's such grace that comes to us when we can acknowledge that. So that was really the impetus. And the nonprofit model was about kind of a countercultural move, in that so much of our wellness, health and wellness industry, it's all commodified.
Yeah.
And, you know, the health and wellness providers, you know, the beauty industry, the fashion industry, the diet industry, the fitness industries, in so many ways profit off of the discontent that other industries socialize and train women in through their advertising and marketing efforts. Mm-hmm. So we have this commercialization of women's bodies, the objectification of women's bodies, that's being used to create dissatisfaction through aspirational marketing.
Yep.
And that's really the whole marketing and advertising thing is about aspirational advertising. We create longing in people for things that they may or may not need, but we definitely want to up their neediness or that felt sense of that. So I really thought, you know, I want it to be about being able to provide high level services and retreats and programs that I would charge a large high fee for if I were doing it as a profit thing, but make it available to a broader range of women by having scholarships and being able to work with women across socioeconomic spheres. I recently saw a sponsored ad on Facebook for some, you know, come away for a weekend in Palm Springs for 2 days and, you know, discover your meaning and purpose and da 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 da. And it was like $2,400. You know, and I mean, I guess they were giving you a hotel room and food, but I'm like, okay, what's worth $2,400? And it's like women are being socialized that we have to go buy the answers to our problems.
Yeah.
And I just believe that that's not the case. I found in my own life and through women I work with that if we take the time to be still, to connect to our bodies, to listen to our lives, a lot of the wisdom is within. So well, the community and the nonprofit avenue is all about kind of reclaiming our power and taking it back from the commodifiers who want to profit off of our discontent.
Yeah.
I love that, breaking down that barrier, and it almost levels the, you know, the playing field, if you will, among women. You know, it's we come from all backgrounds, we come from all, you know, socioeconomic statuses, and at the end of the day, we're all women struggling with the same things, mm-hmm. the same problem.
Yeah, and really, I totally agree with you that we all need ongoing support. It's not about going away for a weekend. I feel like that's just the same thing as going on a new diet. It's like we're looking for this fix to a problem that is so deep down ingrained in who we believe that we are, who we believe that we should be. And so that ongoing support, that ongoing community is so essential, because, you know, Katie and I have been going through this intuitive eating shift over like the last 6 months, you know, maybe longer, but really 6 months. And I mean, it's like just continuous. It takes so long to retrain your thoughts that it's not about, yeah, it's not about just learning in like a couple days. Okay, this is how I love my body. Okay, awesome. I can just move forward now.
Yeah. And also what you're saying about the intuitive thing and the listening within model is so countercultural, and you need a community and you need other women living it, because we're just bombarded by the opposite. both in our peer groups, in our relationships. I mean, you know, who's on paleo, who's on keto, who's on, you know, whatever it is, the latest diet. And it's just, it's gone on forever. And we all know the statistics about diets, they don't work. And it's not a good outcome for any health goals, really, because, well, diets don't work. You might lose the weight, but 95% of the time you regain it. So,
yeah. And then the mental, the like we're talking about right now, all of the stuff that, all the negatives to even getting into dieting, it just leaves you so depleted of feeling of like self-worth, really. Right. And it's, but at the same time, it's so hard to avoid. Remember, we talked to someone on our podcast, I'm forgetting who it was, and she said that she like had barely really come into contact with a lot of diet culture. And I was blown away because it's like, who can even say that nowadays? You know, diet culture is everything.
Does she live under a rock?
Right. Yeah. She was not from the US. So there's, but still.
What would you say is one of the biggest problems or the biggest issues that you see working with women on body image?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say the biggest problem is what I would call disembodiment, that women and people in our culture, we aren't living and we're not socialized to live in our bodies and listen to our bodies and be in relationship with our bodies. We are most often, especially around women's health and beauty, we're being trained to find the answers outside and not within. And so there's this, it's the objectification of our bodies, that our bodies are something outside of ourselves that needs to be fixed or beautified or whatever, adorned a certain way in order to be acceptable. In the feminists kind of look at body image, there's this idea of body surveillance that, you know, women get caught in this pattern of making our body something to be, you know, monitored, and our how we look, you know, to look in the mirror and make sure you're looking okay and your makeup's right or your lipstick's right. And so all the ways that we're socialized not to live from within, but to live as though our body were an entity outside of ourselves. And I think actually the whole term body image reveals the problem, because an image is something outside of yourself. And I remember back in the 90s, late 90s, mid 90s, when I was doing a training with Anita Johnston. Do you know Anita Johnston's work, Eating in the Light of the Moon?
I've heard of her name. Yeah.
Okay. And Carolyn Costin, she's the founder of Montanito Treatment Centers. Well, we used to do trainings over in Hawaii called Tending the Feminine Psyche. And at this retreat, I met a dietitian who, and this was back in the 90s, mind you, so it was a different world then. But she had gone on a 6-month tour around the world with her husband. And at that time, digital cameras were just, whatever the era was, it was somewhere in the 90s, were just beginning to be a thing. And so it was the first time you could ever actually take a picture and then immediately see how it looked. And so she told about traveling out in the bush in Africa and meeting these native Africans that were indigenous people, and these little kids coming and gathering around them, and she took their pictures and then was showing them with the camera their picture, and the kids were laughing and they were like pointing at the picture and then pointing at the kid who was in the picture and telling the kid, you know, she didn't know their language, but she could see they were saying, "That's you. That's what you look like." And the kid was looking at it and he was going, "Oh my gosh," like, you know, shocked, like, "Oh, that's what I look like." And there was just this energy around seeing themselves. And she realized, "Oh my gosh, they have never seen a picture of themselves like that." And, you know, her kind of takeaway was, in places where you don't have images of yourself, or you don't have a predominance of images or mirrors, how does that affect one's relationship to their bodies?
Yeah.
And so that was just a powerful moment of learning for me around. And then, you know, you think about it, every time you look in the mirror is a disembodying experience, because I'm not experiencing my body in that moment. I'm viewing my body. I'm surveilling it, looking at it in a disembodied way. So I think for my money, that's the biggest problem when it comes to body image.
Yeah, that's such an amazing point. I mean, I know I'll go around, I'll be at my house all day and not look in a mirror. And right before I look in a mirror, I'll be like, in my head, I'll actually think like, oh, I know how I feel, but I wonder how I look, you know, because like you'll be feeling great. And then you look at yourself and you're like, oh yeah, I do look like I rolled out of bed. Yeah, exactly. But that's such a good point. I've never thought about that. Like, how crazy would it be to not like look at yourself for even a couple days?
Mm-hmm. The thought of, you know, for someone who does have that negative perception of themselves, you know, imagine the impact that they have every time that they are seeing themselves in a picture, you know, or on their mm-hmm. cell phone or in a mirror. It'd be very interesting to compare that to like those African children, you know, take on someone in that same situation who grows up, gosh, how different would their views be and just mm-hmm. their mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also what if you grew up in a place where you did not have any externalized stereotypes of beauty that were idolized or idealized around you? So that's another factor, is the internalization of media culturally driven stereotypes and idealizations about beauty and health and fitness. You know, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it. So, I mean, it's the whole problem with social media, that on the one hand, it's great, but on the other hand, we are continually bombarded with images, not just related to our physical appearance, but images of other people's lives that give us a whole lot of content in our mental sphere that really doesn't serve us in the long run. Mm-hmm. We're not made, I don't think our brains are made to hold that much content, especially about everybody else's lives. Mm-hmm. At least evolutionarily, our brains are not advanced to that task yet. I think we're probably being in a forced learning curve around our brain neuropathway development to be able to contain so much information, but it's problematic. You know, my work with clients who have, especially young adults and teens, it's the whole social fear of missing out and the other social media related disorders are a factor in body image also.
Yeah.
I had a young person who I met with recently and, you know, talked about dieting from a young age, you know, as young as sixth grade. And you know, I asked her, well, how did you even, you know about this or hear about this? I think you became vegan or something. And, oh, the internet. It was just a simple. And that was kind of, like you said, a teaching moment for me of just, wow, sixth yeah. grade. All she has to do is log on the internet and that changes her whole, how she's going to eat and how she's going to, well, I need to eat this way to have this certain body type. And, mm-hmm. oh, it's terrifying. It's so terrifying.
Yeah. So with Alive and Well Women, what do you guys like recommend, or what are you like coaching on for people to kind of combat this? Because sometimes mm-hmm. when I think of all of just how far our culture has gone down this way, it's like, well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that we work with in Alive and Well is really being in your body and really training. Most of us do not have a vocabulary for describing sensations in our bodies. We, you know, when you assess a client in terms of, well, you'll see it. You're both fitness instructors, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll see it. I teach yoga. That's another thing I do. I actually have multiple other trainings in addition to being a therapist, and one of them is a yoga instructor. Mm-hmm. But you notice in the class how you tell one person, you know, move your right shoulder, and they don't even know their right from their left. And so even large muscle movements you can see sometimes people, they don't really know, or you even mirror something for them and they can't get it. So there's a level of body awareness that many people lack. And so just helping people develop a sensory awareness of their bodies, and both externally, but also interoceptive awareness of how we, the state of our energetic state of being at any given moment, mm-hmm. how we're feeling, and helping people, women is our main audience, obviously, but I do this when I work with men in individual work, but learning how to listen to the physical energy that making certain choices is affecting, you know, so it's like intuitive eating, but on a larger scale, mm-hmm. and finding what combination of lifestyle patterns works best for you to be, feel your best at any given time and have the kind of energy you need. Mm-hmm. So there's the embodiment piece is a big part of it, and learning to listen to our bodies and work with our bodies where we are, to recognize that on any given day, our body doesn't necessarily want to eat the same thing, or just because you said on your menu planning for the week you were going to eat meatloaf that night, maybe you don't want meatloaf. Maybe you just want, you know, a peanut butter sandwich, you know, mm-hmm. and is that okay to make that choice, and giving yourself permission to listen and trust your body and work with your body.
I feel that's a huge challenge for really anybody who's been, I guess the longer they've been ignoring those signals and, you know, suppressing those feel the physical feelings, right? In order to, like we talked about earlier, always constantly trying to change their body, or, you know, whatever it is that they're hearing, and kind of rewiring their brain to listen. That feel like, how long does that take? Like, is it this?
Oh, like your whole life.
Yeah, right.
Well, because you're always changing and there's always something new. Yeah. And the body changes as we go through our lives. And what my body was doing 10 or 15 years ago is different from what my body's doing now. And what's normal in my body at 56, you know, wasn't what I was experiencing when I was 30 or 40. Mm-hmm. And accepting that, you know, our bodies do change and aging is a factor, and the women, and I guess it's also another piece, is really embracing the changing nature of the feminine body. You know, from any given month, we're changing from, you know, one week to the next week, especially when we're in our motherhood years, when we're menstruating and having our cycles. But then even into menopause, things are still shifting and changing. And really honoring those changes, and each stage of life brings different challenges. So, yeah, I don't think you arrive. And I guess that's a big piece of it, too, is recognizing that health and wellness is never something you arrive at, or there's no end goal to it. It's an ongoing relationship, just like a marriage or a friendship or a business partnership. You know, you don't get to a place and suddenly it all works for good forever.
Yeah.
You know, things change and your body changes and you have to adjust with that. So I guess, yeah, it takes a long time and we're all in the journey. And I think that also is countercultural.
Yeah, right. Like, especially if you're teaching it, you know, we're trying to teach this as we go through it. And like you said, we're going to be in the same situation in 10 years, even if we teach it for 10 years, because we're still going to be changing.
So the short answer is forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what you were explaining earlier with just listening to your body and feeling sensations and really tuning in, I think for me, especially, one of a great moment to start doing that was like getting pregnant. It forces you to realize that obviously something else is going on with your body, and it helps you to tune in a little bit more. Whereas before that, you might, you know, you just start going about your business and you don't think that there's any need to listen to your body. But, you know, I know some people still go on to ignore their body, but that's like, I always hope that that's a catalyst for people to start listening to their body when they get pregnant for the first time.
Yeah. I think there's a big piece of that where the other foundational part of our Alive and Well program is love, is really, I think in the culture, we've gotten more embracing of this idea of self-love. Most of the women I've ever worked with weren't able to manufacture self-love from within. there's some sort of a need for a connection to a spiritual source of love, something greater than ourselves that's bigger than just me and my own ability to manufacture that. And so while I and a number of the other main players in our program, facilitators, all come from a more Christ-centered perspective, we really look at that love that we really foundational to our views is, you know, when Jesus said to love God, the whole commandment was summed up in love God and love your neighbors yourself. That love that he referenced is that divine love that is the creation of all things, that we were created by love, for love, to love, and love is our deepest nature. And I actually believe that most of our human problems come back to that problem of love, and that we can't get the love we want, and so we're all struggling along the way. And so a big part of our work is really helping women find that source of love, whether they find it in a religious tradition, or, you know, there's a lot of women who have left traditional religions and are finding that connection a lot through yoga or other kinds of meditation. Mm-hmm. And so we're very supportive and believe really that was Jesus wasn't coming to set up a new religion. Actually, one of his main issues was challenging the established religion and calling people back to this message of love. Mm-hmm. So that's also a thread that is really big in what we do and working with the spiritual connection to love. Because that's what's going to help us change our attitude toward ourselves, is recognizing our inherent worth and goodness.
Yeah.
Which is counter to what a lot of people learn in Christian traditions these days.
Yeah, that's so true. It's on how to be a different from who you are and how to be better, how to be a better version of yourself, which we preach how to be a better version of yourself. But at the same time, we're always trying to have the caveat of, you know, you're perfect the way that you are. It's such a hard balance, but I hope it comes across. Yeah. Well,
and the other part, though, it's interesting, though, the idea, you know, it's difficult when you're working with change, because in a spiritual perspective, better, there's, you know, and in mindfulness, if you think about the Buddhist perspective, labeling and the idea of differentiating something, one thing is better than the other, is actually part of our conditioned Western individualistic competitive based philosophy and cultural milieu mm-hmm. that we operate in. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of the fitness industry is also based on. And, you know, a better self and a brand new you, new year, new you.
Yep.
And it's like, well, really, I only have the old me. So another piece of what we do is we really work with developing the skill of cultural critique and examining our own conditioning of mm-hmm. what is the story we've told ourselves about who we are and how what reality is. Mm-hmm. And so even my kind of challenging you as you talk about the better self is the kind of conversation we might have in our community around, well, is that, where does that come from?
Yeah, I know. I love that.
We hear messages so frequently and so fiercely that to the point they almost become our truth and our beliefs, because yeah. you constantly hear it and you say,
yeah.
You know, if someone tells you, well, the sky is blue, the sky is blue, the sky, eventually you're just going to believe, yes, the sky is blue. And that's mm-hmm. dogmatic. It is what it is.
Yeah. And with what you're saying with this whole like competitive nature on what's good and best and better, I find that like when you're really relating to someone one-on-one, you know, it, maybe you have in this scheme of good, one person has a better this or a better that, when you're really relating to someone one-on-one, you don't see it like that. Mm-hmm. So when we really connect individually, all of those things can fall away. But then yeah. when we step outside of that relationship or step outside of that connection with ourselves, then we see it as, okay, now I need to find a better this or a better that.
Yeah. And even the competitive nature of a lot of, I mean, not that competition is all wrong, but we do live in a very competitive culture. And I think there was, you know, I saw an advertisement somebody had for a self-help kind of thing that, you know, become the most relaxed person you know, or the most calm person you know, or the fittest person you know, or, you know, whatever. And I thought, wow, that's just all about like setting us up for failure, and because it's perfectionistic. Mm-hmm. And perfectionism is such a big part of distorted body image and eating disorders. You know, this drive to be the best, or to be, you know, perfect, to be the most whatever of all people. Like, oh, that's way too much pressure.
Yeah, that's funny though, to even be the most relaxed. That's like an oxymoron. It's like you can be right? the best at being the chillest.
Being the most peaceful person you know.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know.
Perfectionism. Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, no. Try to find your peace and all that pressure, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a big one, but what are three things that we can all do to improve our body image?
Now we're talking about being better and now we're confused in our terminology.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is part of it. It's like the idea that we need to improve our body image is, so this is something that is a good conversation, because the idea that we have to have a good body image is also a problem. Mm-hmm. It, because again, the whole idea of good body image is disembodied. And the truth is, for me at this age of my life, you know, I was just looking at a slideshow I created about 10 years ago for a program I went through. I got trained as a spiritual director, another training. And I had created a photo slideshow at the end of it to show the group. And I was watching it, and I was seeing, you know, and some of these people I still am in connection with, and I was seeing how we've all aged. And there was this one picture of me, and, you know, it was a close up, and like you could see my eyes and my face. And I was like, wow. Oh, you know, then I was like, wow, I can really see how I've aged. And my immediate reaction, sometimes when I look in the mirror these days, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a little startled because I don't recognize myself. And I think, or I see that picture and I'm like, wow, I really did look different. And that's our image. It changes. Mm-hmm. We change. And so the idea that I need to feel good about that as opposed to bad about that, it's like, it's a feeling and experience of seeing myself change and be different. I look different. And how I feel about that, I think, is a product of conditioning. Mm-hmm. I'm trained to look in the mirror and say, oh, I've got more wrinkles and that's bad. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why is that bad? Who says that's bad? That's just what it is when you're 56, not 46.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a big piece, is just challenging a lot of our conditioning. So if you're asking for three things to do, one is to challenge how we have viewed and think about body image and seeing ourselves. And really, it's a lot of it is about taking the power back and going, you know, I'm going to have my own story about what it all means. And it's interesting, right?
Yeah, it really is. And I think when you start to ask those questions, you really do come to a point where you're like, oh, do I really even care that I have wrinkles? Yeah. Like, oh, I actually don't care.
This makes me think of my mom and her sisters. They're all letting their hair go gray.
Yeah. And
I was at a wedding recently with them, and just the comments that other women would say to them, like, oh, it's very shocking, you know, and even my sister's, oh my gosh, mom, I can't believe you're doing that. And I'm really proud that she is, you know, and, but it's interesting when you take a step, like you said, take a step back and just kind of be aware and question, why is that a bad thing? Why should she have to color her hair every day, you know, every day? Why is that a thing?
And
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's interesting because I quit coloring my hair. I just had kind of boring brown hair, whatever, late 30s. And I started coloring it just for fun and doing some highlights and stuff. And I continued doing that till actually around the time I'm telling you about, when I saw that was in that program and did the slideshow. And I started swimming a lot, and I just was done with needing to deal with, you know, worrying about, oh, I spent all that money to color my hair. And so I just thought, well, I wonder what color it is. I haven't seen it for 10 years. So I let it go, and I just had this cool gray starting, and it was just beautiful. And I remember I hadn't seen the community of people I was training with for like 6 months when I'd started to grow it up. And everyone was like, oh my gosh. You know, they were like, everyone was like so positive about it. So I continued, and I hadn't colored my hair for years, and it continued. And fortunately, I had color that grew and really kind of fun. And it's even what people are paying now to get their hair colored, my color.
Right.
But I am, you know, I reserve the right to color my hair, and I'm threatening to go blonde and do a social sociological study to see if people respond differently. Because I was with a friend out to dinner this summer who's 14 years older than me, and she colors her hair. She's kind of blondish, you know, and there were three of us at the table. Her husband was with us. And the waiter, when the waiter came, you know how like the deference is to the oldest woman, you know, you start with the oldest woman. That's kind of what waiters are trained to do. But mm-hmm. he kept, you know, turning to me like I was, you know, the senior member of the group, or I don't know, whatever. And it was just, yeah. I don't know what he meant, but I was thinking, does he looking at me with my gray hair as the old lady?
Yeah.
You know, maybe, maybe not, but I'd be curious to see what, if I got different responses at this age, if I were blonde. So yeah. If I do that, I'll contact you and we can have another.
For sure. I would love to do a social experiment like that too. And I mean, just in general, outside of like going gray, coloring your hair a different color does something weird to your better, not body image, but
your
just
perception
your
of
perception
yourself.
Of who you are. Yeah. It's like the first time that I'd put even any blonde in my hair, I was like, whoa, you just look, you can look so different. And then you realize like, oh, it's me, but you have this idea of what you look like that it just can throw you.
Yeah. So I think the other piece really is this idea of surrounding ourselves with women who are choosing an alternative path and trying to challenge some of the structures of reality as they are in the health and beauty and wellness industries. I also think the piece of recognizing that our privilege, you know, that a lot of the populations, I would guess, that listen to your podcast, a lot of the most, all the women I work with at this point are really, we are so privileged and we have so much. And to think about how we can have our own health and wellness be about really being of service to others and helping others and reversing some of the economic injustices of our world. The diet industry is a $50 billion industry. I mean, if everyone who was participating in that diet industry gave 10% of what they're spending on the diets to help starving children.
Yeah, we're actually going to do an episode that releases after this one about Thanksgiving. And going now that we're not obsessing over what we're putting in our bodies on Thanksgiving Day, how much more present we can be at Thanksgiving. So like you're talking about financially, how can we could give so much more back, but also just like how you're showing up in the world with your energy. It's like you can actually make a difference just in by making connections with people.
Exactly. Yeah. Amen. That's beautiful. I love that.
So it sounds like we definitely have a lot of work to do, I think, yeah. as a culture, as a population, but is there anything else that you really hope to see women's, like where do you hope to see women's relationships with their bodies in, you know, 25 years from now?
Yeah, I love that question. You know, I want to see women love ourselves so well that we really do make reversals of economics in our world. I feel like women, there's a writer named Jean Shinoda Bolen. She's a Jungian analyst, and she wrote a book called Gather the Women, Save the World. And in Jungian psychology, there's this idea of the masculine and the feminine, which is not male and female, but it's energies within all of us. So we all have masculine and feminine energies. And that what we've been living in modern history, certainly is what she would call a broken masculine, that is all about power and domination and control. And that really women's bodies and our broken relationships with our bodies have fallen into that. You know, this whole idea that we need to control our bodies and dominate our drives and our desires. And the feminine is much more about the nurturance and the empathy. So I see a movement of women like, you know, what you're doing, calling women back to trusting our own inner authority and rising up to be so clear about our own love for ourselves and that we let go and we don't need to spend so much money on all the stuff that we tend to buy to make ourselves feel better about ourselves or fix our problems or whatever. I mean, not that self-indulgence or self-care is wrong, but if I have enough money to buy a Coach bag or whatever kind of handbag, what would it mean to give that much money to a charity that's trying to reverse children's hunger or get education or water for kids in Africa or other places where there's not resources? So I guess what I would say my hope for 25 years from now, where we are with our relationship with our bodies, is that we're in our bodies and we're being forces of goodness and power in the world and helping people that are suffering and reversing the social injustices that are a part of our current world.
Oh, yes.
I love
that.
Yeah, right. Just that simple, simple task.
No pressure.
Gather the women, save the world.
Yeah.
We always talk about, Lauren and I, she's got two young girls, and we always talk about, gosh, what are they going to talk about when they're like teenage girls? What are they going to say about their bodies? How are they going to treat each other? And we're just so fascinated. I mean, gosh, we hope that they're going to be so much further than we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least my household, I'm very, very hopeful, but I'm also hopeful for the world that it's, I see that it's changing. I'm hoping that it's changing for the better. And, you know, we're having this conversation, so we're adding a little pebble to that.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is also the trickle down effect, or, you know, you're passing on women as adult women, like, you know, the two of you, myself, we become mentors. And that's a part of our program too, is that we're mentors to one another and that it goes both ways. You know, what I learned from being with you and what you learned from being with me, that's a very feminine way. It's a non-hierarchical approach.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize that we all need each other and nobody has the answers just because they're older or they've whatever. And so I think relationships that are cross-generational are also a key to shifting things in the world around body. And that's one of the powerful things we hear from women in our programs, that the multi-generational community is so powerful. And one of our key members, whose mom has not understood what she was doing with us around, especially the feminist part of, you know, empowerment, she recently called Stephanie and said, "Oh my gosh, I need to talk to you." And she just had this revelation of something she was reading in the Bible about a woman who was hunched over and went to Jesus, and Jesus healed her, and she was standing up straight. And she said, "I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it?" And Stephanie was like, "Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about." And she goes, "I think Jesus was a feminist." And it was this revelation, you know, this mom who was just schooled in a very conservative, limited, like very, my friend Stephanie has felt repressed. You know, it was a lot of covert repression and misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody came out and said women are lesser, but everything was modeled indicated that.
Yeah.
So she's been working through all of this, and her mom's been trying to get it, but, you know, not really getting it. And so there was this revelation. I was like, wow, that's so awesome, because that's like it's not the trickle down, it's the trickle up.
That, right.
Because her daughter is on this path she's getting insights, and maybe someday she'll come along and have more revelations of what's possible. So you have so much to give to us that are, you know, a generation or two ahead of you or three. And I think that's part of also what's inspiring to me with our work is, you know, seeing the 25-year-old who comes along and goes through the program and is ready to, you know, come and change the world with us and could actually lead it, you know, lead the troops in a way that I can't because I'm, you know, at a different stage of my life. So
yeah,
I'm excited for what you're doing and that there's a lot of this springing up in the world, little things coming to bring a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for what you're doing.
Well, yeah, no, that
thank
means
you
so much. Yeah. Yeah.
It's powerful for sure.
Yeah. And I see that cross-generational stuff all the time as well. And it's mm-hmm. so amazing. Just it, like you said, it really combats the idea that we know more the older that we get, you know, we can always learn from anyone. Mm-hmm. So always being open to that is definitely important.
Yeah.
So Sissy, we love asking this question as our last question in interviews. What's the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Well, today, actually, this morning, I played hooky from work. And my friend Stephanie that I was mentioning to you, who's also part of our Alive and Well, she played hooky. Don't let the people listen to the podcast. And we went to the mountains. And we took a hike and we brought drums and we drummed on the mountain and we read poetry and we connected with our wild woman nature. And it was nourishing for my soul to be out in nature and to do these practices with my soul friend. And even in the past week, that's probably the best thing that's happened to me. So
I love that. Now, we and just in society right now is talking a lot about self-care, and it makes me wonder, like, how often do you do something like that?
Well, I used to do it a lot more often. After breast cancer, I was very committed to self-care, and I spent, you know, probably 10 years only working, you know, maybe no more than 20 hours a week in my therapy practice, which is a lot, but that was all I was doing. And as I began to, after 10 years, and I realized, oh, I wasn't getting cancer again, and I guess I wasn't going to die, I found I myself being more interested in doing a lot of these workshops and programs, and I was teaching at a university as an adjunct. And so different seasons, different capacities for that, but we talk in Alive and Well about alignment, and it's a yoga term. You know, that's the idea of fitness, right? You need to have everything aligned for the best experience of the pose. So I'm pretty connected to how to stay and notice if I'm out of alignment. So I try to practice pretty regularly. And I'm a committed meditator every day. I've got my meditation and try to swim a few times a week. But nature, I haven't had enough nature lately.
So yeah.
I need a big hooky day to get a good 4 hours out.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
I am stealing that term alignment. That just clicked for me. Using that word alignment rather than balance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That makes so much more sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Because balance is unrealistic.
and it means everything has to be equal. That's not reality.
Yeah.
When we're ready to expand the new territories, will look you two up and see if you want to start Alive and Well Women. And
we will be your Indianapolis headquarters.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good.
Sissy, we were absolutely honored to have you on the podcast today. If our listeners want to get a hold of you or learn more about, you know, if they're in the area, or how can they just hear more about your message? What's the best way for them to contact or connect with you?
Yeah. Probably to find us on aliveandwellwomen.org. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Alive and Well Women. And I can be reached through the organization. So, and there's a little bit of information about me there. And I also have a personal website that is in that dear need of upgrading. But so I won't even tell you what that's about.
Well, thank you so much. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you. Bye.